Clean contact.
I'd hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Here it comes. Oh my goodness.
Hello and welcome to the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes, and with me is Chris Olerking and a special guest, Nick Kiefer. Nick, how would you like to be introduced? He's the most known for being in the 2017 Long Drive Champions. You finished third that year. Got seen you in the cube here a little bit, hitting 140 mile an hour swing speed. It's been pretty cool, and so thanks for joining us up here on the podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
How would you like to be? What's your title when people ask what you do? What do you say?
Technically for tax purposes on paper.
Sure.
I'm a professional golf entertainer.
Okay.
So I compete in professional long drive. That's kind of what I do. I do corporate and charity events for a living. So I basically travel around the Midwest and hit golf balls for people and be able to do it for a living.
Very cool. What is the longest drive you've ever hit?
I think recorded to date in competition, I think 467 is the farthest.
Is that like with a lot of wind or?
It was uphill into the wind.
Oh. Very cool. Chris, welcome back.
As always. Happy to be here.
Chris was in Florida catching the rays.
How do you guys know each other?
Nick reached out to me a few years back, interested in getting my opinion on what he was doing, and he said, "Hey, I can hit the ball long, but I need to learn how to hit the ball straight, and also need to be able to adapt my golf swing to the conditions that the competitions are set at. So being able to ride the wind." Keep the ball underneath the wind, hit it high. And so, we started working a couple years ago, and then we're back together here.
Awesome. Nick, you look a bit more like a football linebacker or, designated hitter.
I got two kids, okay? Leave me alone.
than your typical, golf build. Have you always been a golfer? How'd you get into the long drive?
No. So, growing up as a kid, I golfed, with my dad and stuff like that, but it was always baseball. I played hockey a little bit growing up till I was probably about seven, but it's been baseball since I was three till I was 19, 20, ended up getting hurt and then kind of ended the career. And honestly, my story started, I went to the PGA show, the PGA Superstore, got a driver just to go to the driving range with my buddies, and I ended up hitting the ball pretty far, and they told me I should try doing long drive, and I didn't know what it was. I was like, what are you talking about? I looked it up on YouTube, saw a couple things. I was like, these guys are ginormous. They're hitting it, 400 plus. And I was like, I'm never going to be able to do this. And ended up training a little bit. Got a first golf club from Crank Golf that I was hitting. They're like one of the top companies in long drive. And ended up hitting that. And went to Worlds in 2016, and I think I was 36th in the world or something I finished. So it's kind of all from there, man. Ever since 2016, it's been year after year.
So how old are you now?
I'm 26 now.
So what year how long did it take you from when you went to that driving range with your PGA Superstore club to Worlds 2016? How many years is that?
That was 9 months.
9 months.
Yeah.
Okay. How long were you hitting that first driver? Do you know?
Yeah, that's interesting.
It was just pure baseball swing. It was literally taking the baseball swing and just swinging up on the golf ball instead of swinging on plane. Mm-hmm. I thought I was fast. I think I was probably pretty quick. I think I was probably about 200 ball speed.
For people who don't
I would say, I think PGA Tour average is 170? I think it went up a little bit now because all the other guys are getting quick. Mm-hmm. 200 ball speed is kind of a big milestone for anyone. There are a couple tour players that can hit 200 ball speed. So I would
not
say
many.
Like
yeah. not many.
not I didn't like Tony Finau. He hit 200 and it was like a big deal. Like, how did he do this? You know, other pros were pretty impressed.
He's also like 6'6". Too. He's a big giant man.
So you're hitting that like right out of the gate, 200.
No idea where it's going, but sure. I mean, maybe one out of 40 golf balls went straight. But
do you have video of that? Those swings?
I do. Yeah,
I'd love to see what those swings look
like.
Just not having a concept of the swing, but just like going baseball and being an athlete, ripping.
Honestly, it wasn't that horrible. Like, granted, like it was not a good golf swing, but it looked like I was an athlete. Sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No idea where it was going. Like, couldn't tell you.
Got it.
And, and I broke a lot of drivers, too, which was the funny thing. So, like, I was way slower.
Yeah.
But because I was hitting the golf ball over the driver face, like, all over the face, mm-hmm. I was breaking drivers, like, once a week.
So you just send them back and they send you another one?
No, you'd have to buy them.
You'd have to buy them?
Yeah.
They don't do warranty?
No. No, not with long drive stuff, unfortunately.
Okay.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're just buying a bunch of new drivers?
Yeah, it was really expensive. Really expensive.
But you're just like, I'm going for it.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why did you? Like, to me, I just think if I was in that situation, like I broke a couple drivers, like how spend $1,000 on something I might not even get to.
Like, I think because I'm just so competitive, man. You know, I mean, like because of the whole baseball stuff ended because injuries and stuff like that, like my plan was to go far in baseball and I had that on track. And, you know, ever since I was a kid, I was a left-handed pitcher. I hit the ball well. I threw hard. I threw in the mid-90s and I had everything to go on track and ended up getting hurt and kind of, you know, I never got, like, interested in the school aspect of it. So, like, for me, it's like I wanted to play baseball. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't want to go to school. That's not what I've liked my entire life, you know. But if I would have finished school and I would have went to baseball, things would have turned out a lot differently, you know. And because of how things went in my life, you know, I have two beautiful kids. I have a wife and I think everything happens for a reason. So for me, it was I'm competitive. I think I can do this. And then once I started actually going to these competitions and seeing that, okay, like me doing this and having no idea what I'm doing and still only, you know, 15, 20 yards behind these guys, and these guys have been doing it for 5-6 years, I was like, there's something there. So
you felt close.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Close exactly. enough to give it a try.
Yeah.
So are these tournaments just anyone can pay to, like the maybe like the regional or local qualifying to get to Worlds? How does that work?
Yeah, so I started, I think my first competition I want to say was like a super just like hometown put together competition. It didn't have anything to do with like World Long Driver Golf Channel. And it was called the Turkey Shootout actually. And it was in West Columbia, South Carolina. And I went to the first event, and there was, like, 8 guys there. But, like, 7 of the guys were, like, all guys who've been doing it for a while, who have all been to the world stage, have done well. And I was like, what am I, like, what? I broke 3 drivers when I was there. I actually broke the top of the driver, and the ball, the piece of the golf ball was stuck in the top of the driver head. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. But that was kind of, like, my first year of, like, people knew I was really fast because I looked fast and I swung fast, but I just was so wild and I hit the golf ball everywhere. So from back then till now, so Golf Channel, I believe, picked up the sport, I want to say, in 2017 or 2016. I think picked up the sport in 2016. And how it works is that we have local and regional qualifiers. Now for 2020, they changed the name to Q-Series. Sounds a little more professional, I guess. So what it is that they have – this year I believe they have roughly 8 locations to where you go to a local and a regional. You pay $50 to hit 6 golf balls. If you finish within, like, the top guys, you move on to the regional, right? So what you do, you pay your money, hit the golf balls. If you qualify within the yardages of that group, you move on to the regionals. Then you have to pay the $249 for the regionals, and then it goes by a point system. So how it works is that you have 4 guys on a tee box. Longest ball gets 200, second 100, third 50, and last 25. So basically we hit 5 rounds of 6 golf balls now because they changed it. 5 rounds of 6 golf balls, whoever comes up top, they take the top 3 guys, and then you get exempt into the world championships for the later ons for the year.
Got it. Cool. So it sounds like, so would you say world long drive? What do you call it? Long drive? What do you call?
You mentioned
the
drive.
Sport. That's what you call it, world long drive.
Yeah.
Is in the very early stages of, you know, it seems like they're changing rules. You're talking about changing golf balls. Yeah. Golf Channel just got it.
Yeah. I mean, world long drive, like, long drive has been around since like the 80s, I believe. Before it was owned by Remax. So they did Remax World Long Drive, I think, for like 20 years. And then Remax stopped doing it.
I remember the houses, right?
That was in Mesquite. That was that was where I hit that 467 ball.
But didn't they, am I remembering this right? Like each player had like a person in the stands that was like their person. And if that person won, they like won a house. Maybe you didn't watch.
No.
Okay, I swear. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I dreamt that, but I think like that's what happened. Yeah.
He's probably still in diapers.
Yeah. Did you ever take any instruction?
I did. So I did take a couple instruction. I think myself playing golf actually really helped because the more golf I played, I noticed the better ball striker I became, and also I was hitting the golf ball a lot farther and straighter, right? So the biggest thing that I've noticed from doing this for the last couple of years, and driver is like my expertise. Like, I know the golf swing quite well. I would say driver compared to an iron is slightly different, but they are the same, just with like angle of attack and everything like that. For me is that when I first started, and Chris can vouch for that, is that when I came to see him, I was super over the top, right? So like my swing plane was super steep. So I was hitting almost down on the golf ball. And that's kind of the biggest thing for people, right, is that with a driver, it's the more that you can hit up on it. I know that most PGA Tour players are probably roughly even or maybe down or slightly up, some of them. But the biggest thing to gain distance is that to have a positive attack angle, so meaning that you're swinging up on the golf ball slightly. So with irons, you're swinging down, right, obviously to compress the golf ball, and that also creates spin. With a driver, my attack angle when I compete and even when I play golf is anywhere from 3 to 7, somewhere around that, up on the golf ball, right? So that's the biggest thing I think that helped me, is that to be able to swing from the inside and then also hit up on the golf ball. And I think, honestly, that contributes to just a lot of hitting golf balls, doing charity events, seeing ball flight, and playing a lot of golf, man, you know? So I went from literally not knowing how to play golf to, like, I can confidently say I'm probably about a 4 handicap.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. What do you hit on the tee when you play golf? Like, do you actually hit drivers on par fours? Or
just depends on kind of how the course layout is. But normally, like,
your
2-iron.
Your lines must be incredibly aggressive.
Yeah, so 2-iron, honestly, is my go-to, you know. I'm probably about 170, 72 ball speed somewhere with the 2-iron. And I can hit it about 290.
Like, yeah, 290.
Yeah, 290, 300. And it's a lot easier to control with a 2-iron than if I miss with a driver. Because if I miss, I'm screwed. I'm hitting 17 off the tee box. So,
yeah. And from watching, like, the past few competitions on TV, seeing who some of the guys are in the sport, how would you – maybe you have any stories or any way to compare, like – the culture of like the guys on tour and of the sport compared to, you know, I don't know, golf country club or PGA culture. It seems like quite two different crowds almost.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have a few guys who are like really, really good golfers. Like Tim Burke's good golfer. Tim's also a 2-time world championship. He's a club championship over at his club, in Orlando. He's probably a scratch golfer, if not plus one. You got a couple other guys, Paul Howe, Wes Patterson, Trent Scruggs is a good golfer. Trent actually almost qualified he almost hit a Monday qualifier.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he's focusing more on golf this year than he is long drive. He definitely has a chance at playing it. But all the other guys are just big, meaty meatheads that are all 6'6 and just are strong people, you know. I would say it's similar to kind of how the baseball locker room is, you know. I mean, everyone is friendly and stuff until you get on the tee box, and then it's a little bit different. But everyone's pretty good, man.
Are you friends with some of the guys?
Yeah. You know, I definitely have a couple friends that actually close friends and stuff like that, that, you know, have watch my two kids and stuff like that and help me out in that way. You know, there's not many of them that live in this area. So there's me and one other guy. Basically, it's just me and Steven Coyce. Steven, I believe, is like ranked close to the top 10. Coyce is another big giant man as well. I think he's like 6'4 and probably squats 700 pounds. But it's just basically me and him in the Midwest. Everyone else is California, Florida, South Carolina, Tennessee, and stuff like that. So for them to have two guys here that are pretty highly ranked is pretty cool.
Awesome. So how far did you make it in 2016?
2016, I think I was like top 30 something.
Does that 36. Get to like the Golf Channel round or
No, Golf Channel round's top 16. For the world championship.
And so you did your second time ever competing, you made it
2017, yeah.
2017,
yeah.
Right.
I did previous like tour events and stuff like that before the world championships, sure. That I had a couple televised finishes at. But Worlds was the only one in 2017 where I actually hit good golf balls on TV. So like prior to that, in 2017, I hit in Denver on Golf Channel. And for some reason, every single time I hit on TV or I got in the top eight rounds, I was hitting against Justin James. Okay. Like the first guy that I had to go through was Justin. And Justin was the guy who went on to win in 2017, the world championship. So Justin at that time was the best hitter of the year. He I want to say he won a couple events that year as well, but it literally every single time me and him were laughing about it. Every single time I made top eights, he was the person I had to go up first. So I always kind of had that thing in the back of my head. I'm like, oh crap, now I got to hit against him now. Yada, yada, yada. So it was funny because we had a non-televised event. So my first son, Drake, was born in May of 2017. The day after he was born, I went on a plane and flew to Oklahoma to compete in an event. And I didn't want to go, and my wife told me I had to go. She's like, you've already paid for all this money. She said, go. Something can happen. You know what I mean? So I ended up going to Oklahoma. I hit the ball really well. I ended up finishing top eight. Who knows? I was hitting against Justin in the top eight. So I hit it in the top eight rounds to move on to the semifinals. I hit a ball 406. Which was like the longest ball the entire day. And Justin comes up, hits like two balls OB, hits one 407.
Oh.
this is a legit true story. He hits it 407. And I go, great. You know what I mean? So then I come up again, and I hit a 404 and a 405. And then I didn't beat the 407.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, what's your mindset going into that? Like, how do you overcome what you probably got some nerves being on TV.
Oh, yeah,
you're playing
sure.
the best guy. Yeah. And then now, you know, you basically have to hit the perfect shot.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in situations with baseball being a pitcher too, to where I've been under pressure and stuff like that. But it's just a good feeling, man. It's like the butterfly feeling in your stomach. Like you are nervous and kind of have a little bit of anxiety, but once you start going or once you hit that first golf ball, then it's kind of just everything just relaxes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was it's pretty funny, though, that he hit it 407. I was like, are you kidding me?
And so you can watch your 2017 round. It's on the Golf Channel's website.
Oh, I know. It's still up there, too. It's cool.
They said you beat the defending champ.
Dude, okay. So story about that. Okay, so Joe Miller from Europe, he is, I think, probably besides Mike Dobbin. So you got a couple huge people in long drive. Mike Dobbin is 6'8", just I think he's like 340 or 350 pounds.
And how tall are you?
I'm like 5'10 on a good day with golf shoes on.
Okay.
So I'm basically a midget compared to the rest of the guys, right? So Joe Miller is probably 6'5", probably 260 to 280 pounds. He's a big man. And so at the World Championships, they put us right next to each other for warm-ups. Like, literally, like, where Chris is sitting, that was his tee box, and where I'm sitting was my tee box. And we're, like, 4 feet away from each other. And he, like, don't get me wrong, Joe's a very fast human being swinging a golf club. But it's very much intimidating when you're sitting right next to the person watching him swing, when he's making those, like, whoosh noises with his mouth and stuff. I mean, it was terrifying. Like, I wasn't scared of like him, but I was scared of like I'm going to look like an idiot. I'm going to go up here and he's going to beat me by 50 yards and it's going to be over with. But like I said, like you're nervous until you hit the first golf ball. And I wouldn't say I got lucky, but I was able to get my first golf ball, I believe, in the grid. So the first golf ball of basically the first time at the World Championships under the lights, you got probably 1,000 people there. You got a bunch of people watching on TV. I have a bunch of people watching at home. And the first golf ball, I hit down the middle. And it was, I think it was like 390. And I was like, okay, like that wasn't horrible. Like I'm at least I'm not going to lose by a ton, right? And then I think it was like the third or fourth that I hit at 426, I think. And then I was like, all right, like that might hold. And then fortunately enough, Joe, I just didn't hit a good ball and I ended up moving on. So it was scary, dude.
Is that the game plan? Like get a ball in the grid and then just swing away?
I would say
you're always swinging away, but
yeah.
But just letting it go.
So like the biggest thing that I've noticed is that, you know, watching like I'm assuming that some of these people that watch the podcast know who Kyle Berkshire is, the guy who won this year with the long hair that has the rock. And he's by far the fastest guy in the world. I mean, he hit 230 mile an hour ball speed on TrackMan. It's never been done before. He put up 228 on live television. Never been done before. And he's not that big of a kid, right? But the biggest thing that I've learned in the last couple of years of doing this and that I'm still trying to perfect is that I need to be able to take my warm-up practice swing and dial it up a little bit in competition, but dial it up enough to where I'm not losing sequence or technique. Because as soon as you can figure out that combination of where you're hitting good balls in the grid and you're getting more golf balls in and you're hitting the golf balls better on the face and you're spinning the ball better, you're going to move on and you're going to win rounds and you're eventually going to win events. Because at the end of the day, regardless if you're 260 ball speed, but if you're spinning the golf ball a ton compared to someone like if you guys had a chance to watch a World Championships this year, Kyle was like 152 club head speed, 225 ball speed, and his opponent was like 142 club speed and like 211 ball speed. And Kyle only hit it 15 yards further. And Kyle spun the ball a little bit more, carried it a little bit farther, but only hit it like 15 yards further. And we're talking like 20 mile an hour, 15 mile an hour difference in ball speed, and the ball only went that much further. So like people are winning having lower club head speed, but they're hitting the golf ball better trajectory, better spin,
just more optimized.
Correct. Yeah. Well, I would say that's probably one of the most important things.
Yeah, because you see sometimes watching it, you know, and I know conditions are different. They're swinging a million miles an hour. It's really hard to hit it straight. But you'll see someone will get by with what seems like, you know, a 375 total. And this is in the top eight just because the other guy couldn't hit one in. It seems.
Well, yeah.
You know,
I mean,
is there
like
any of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the last couple of years, like I've seen too, like you got the guys that aren't the fastest that are like in the mid 130s, but they're optimizing the ball flight perfectly. And they're making top eights and top 16s at the World Championships and making televised events. But in reality, like they're hitting against guys that are swinging mid 140s, low 150s, but because they're optimizing and hitting the golf ball so perfectly, like Bobby Bradley, for instance, Bobby Bradley is one of my good buddies. He's the owner of Royalty Sports. He's the one who got me into doing charity events. He's by far not the fastest guy at all. He's 133, 134, top ball speed of like 206, but that dude he will hit the fairway more times than anyone in the entire sport of long drive.
You'd think that'd be harder to come up against, just knowing this guy's going to hit it in the.
It is. So like back in 2017, Bobby ended up finishing top 16 at the World Championships, and the first person who we went up against was Justin James, and at that point Justin was the fastest guy out there, and he was putting up 220 ball speeds and stuff like that. And at that point, because you're at the World Championships, adrenaline so much, and because it was more of a carry grid, Bobby lost because Justin actually didn't hit that good of a ball, but Justin hit it like I think like 410, and Bobby couldn't get anything over like 395 or something like that, or 400. So, but if you have conditions to where you need to hit a good ball flight and you need to hit it in, people like that succeed over the people that are a lot faster, because the faster the ball's going, the more things can happen to it.
You mentioned carry grid. What does that mean?
So carry grid. So, good example. So Rochester this year, was my first event back. So I ended up breaking my hand last year, and it was just a big pain in the butt. And I had to have hand surgery. I broke the hook of my hamate, so they had to go in and take it out.
You what? You broke the hook?
Hook of the hamate, it's called. That's what my surgeon told me. So it's a little bone. So you have a I don't even know how to put this. So, like, I'm left-handed. So on my right hand, if you take by your pinky and then go down to the end of your wrist, that's kind of where I broke it, okay. Right? So they had to go in, take the bone out, sew me back up, and I was out for like 6 or 7 months. I got it surgery in September 2018. I had to pull out of the World Championships for 2018 because my hand. 2018, I had an okay season. I still had a couple TV events, and my hand was broke the entire year. So I ended up getting
hurt.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad. It was bad. By the end of the year, I couldn't hold on to the golf club at all. Oh. It was, like, pretty bad. So got surgery, did all the therapy stuff. By, like, December, January, I was hitting again. Felt great. First event comes up in March. I go to Phoenix for the first event. I hit 3 golf balls on the driving range. Couldn't hold on to the golf club. I was, like, great. Yeah, you know, I spent all the money to get down there. I hit 3 golf balls. I couldn't hit. So I ended up pulling out of the event, flew back home, saw my doctor, got x-rays, MRIs, CAT scans, and he was like, everything's fine. I was like, okay, sweet. Like, so I guess it was just like a bruise and kind of scar tissue stuff. So ended up taking off from basically March till July, and just did corporate and charity events, and ended up coming back in July in Rochester, and ended up finishing 3rd on Golf Channel. So, but going back to the carry grid, Rochester was a new event. Ryan Steinberg was the one who hosted the event and kind of put the whole thing together. They built a grid like a week before the event. So they laid new sod down. So when they laid new sod down, the sod didn't have time to really heal into the already dirt. So it was a very plush and kind of wet surface. So how it worked in Rochester is that anything that you didn't carry over like 350 yards would just plug in the ground, right? So you had guys who hit the ball high, for instance, right? So a lot of these charity golf guys or guys that are a little bit slower tend to hit the ball higher to carry it further. So for me, I launched a ball roughly around like 9 to 12 degrees. These guys are launching it like 13 to 16 degrees with the driver. So if you launch it higher with less spin, it's going to carry farther. So because they could hit a better golf shot, they were beating me, but they were 10, 15 miles an hour slower than me, ball speed-wise. So that's kind of what a carry grid is.
Do people make adjustments based on the, you know, like you're saying? Like, would you ever try to hit the ball different, or is it just too hard to?
They do. I would say for me, like, if I hit a good golf ball, it's going to go pretty far regardless of the conditions. If someone's swinging it that fast, it is pretty hard to be able to say, oh, I'm going to hit this lower or I'm going to hit this higher. Normally when I go up there, I'll have 3 drivers that I'll kind of have on stage with me, and one will be a 1 degree higher loft than all the rest of my drivers. So if it ends up having to where it like switches completely downwind or something like that, to where if I do hit it a couple degrees higher, maybe I'll get 30, 40 yards extra because the wind's howling. But other than that, honestly, I've stuck to just kind of hitting the same ball flight all the time.
And how do you describe your ball flight?
I would say like a mid ball flight.
Do you try to hit it straight?
So over the last couple of years, it's been kind of different. So when I first started, I was hitting these huge cuts. Like, it was just like, I mean, it was really bad. But then over, you know, 3-4 month period, just from hitting so many golf balls and kind of understanding of where the golf face is at impact. I would say I hit slight cuts, but they were low spinning cuts. And then if I really hit one good, it was just straight down the middle. Right now I've been hitting slight draws, which is kind of cool. I never was kind of able to hit draw golf balls before, but now it's been working out pretty good.
Yeah, so now, I mean, you're here starting to work with Chris a little bit. Why do you need more help? What do you need help on? What are you hoping to get? What are you trying to get better at this stage of your career?
For me, I would just say consistency and just sequence. So, like, for me, ever since breaking my hand, like, I just haven't felt, like, fluent, if that makes sense. So, like, if you look at my swing now, I tend to hang on my backside. So, meaning I tend to hang on my left side. So I don't get through the golf ball completely on impact. So by not doing that, I'm losing club head speed. And also, recently I've been going to see this guy over at Team Rehabilitation. That's a hard word for me to say, dude. Jesus.
You did great.
So he's a PT guy over there. His name's Jeremy, and we've been working on some mobility stuff. So I went there a month ago. I did some tests and stuff like that. He found out my hand's still really, really weak, the one that I broke. I'm 170 pounds in my left hand for the squeeze test, and I'm 115 in my right hand, the hand that I broke. So that transfers a lot into everything else in my body. So that explains why my shoulder's been sore. That explains why the right side of my back's been sore. That explains why I'm not delivering the club like I used to. And then we went on to mobility, right? So my lower back mobility is great because your lower back doesn't twist and turn as much as your upper back. But then we moved up to the upper back mobility. So my left side is great. My backswing is great. My follow-through is horrible. It's less than average of a normal person, which explains why my back is sore, why I can't hit as many golf balls as I should be able to, and stuff like that. I think the biggest thing with golf and to gain speed and sequence and flexibility is to do more mobility work. I think that's the biggest thing.
Cool. Chris, do you have any, what are your thoughts? I guess I can be general or specific on working with Nick. You have a lot of elite junior golfers right now. Not, you know, the world long drive guys aren't knocking on our door. So what do you think?
No, they're not.
I'm a nice guy.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Because you think about, you know, the juniors are trying to hit it longer and Nick's trying to hit it straighter, you know. And you know, developing a golf swing that has consistency to it. So, like, the contact on the face is consistent, the delivery is consistent. It's just going to be more predictable where the ball goes. And so, I mean, everyone's trying to get to that level, you know. And so most of my work is trying to get people to hit the ball straighter, and you can hit it farther through better technique, but
yeah,
but certainly you know, straighter and more solid. And so, you know, when I look at Nick and watch his golf swing, you know, it's really dynamic, you know, and it's kind of like you got to slow it down on video. There's no way you can see it. You can read the ball flight, but still, I mean, the way he's like compressing the ball. And I remember when we went up to Highland Park and we were on the back tee of I think 14.
Yeah.
The dog leg right, and he's just sending him into the bus depot, you know.
I remember that.
Bouncing off the top of the buses.
And I've done that on my second shot there, but not in the first one.
Yeah. Nick, can you talk to the listeners a little bit about when you talk about hitting the grid, like, you know, how wide is a grid and what is it equivalent to? Like a golfer who hits the ball like 200 yards or something trying to hit a fairway. You guys talk about, like, I don't think the listeners realize how hard it is to hit the grid with the club head speed you guys are generating.
Yeah, so, like, this has been brought up a lot, especially over social media. Like, people watch us on TV and they're like, look, you know, this sucks because these guys can't hit the grid. And I say to people that say that, they don't know anything about golf or speed or how the golf ball is kind of affected with anything. So for I don't remember exactly, but I want to ballpark this, and don't count me out if this is completely wrong, but I want to say, so at each of our events, they try and get the grid as close to 50 yards wide as they can, right? So some events like Atlantic City, it's going to be about 37 to 40 yards wide, so it's a little bit narrower. But us swinging like 145 miles an hour, for us to hit that 50-yard wide grid, I believe for an average golfer, it's like them hitting like anywhere from like a 7 to 11-yard wide grid. So if you take you guys and you guys try and hit a 7 to 11-yard wide grid out of six golf balls, how many times do you think you're going to hit that grid? Yeah. I mean, one, literally like 7 to 11 yards is like as wide as this room. Like it's you know what I'm saying? So it's like when you're moving the club that fast and say that you're off by a millimeter. Like I've done tests with quad with the launch monitor. Mm-hmm. To where I'm off a millimeter or two off the face, and the ball will go 40 yards left, 40 yards right, or it will spin 1,500 more RPM, or the ball speed will be down 6 to 10 miles an hour just because I'm off that much. So when you're moving things that fast, it's harder to hit the ball straight. Now, if I hit my 2-iron, I'd hit the grid probably 90% of the time, if not more than that. But because we're moving it so quick, we have such low lofts. That's another thing, too, is that on average, I would say these guys use between 2.5 to 4 degrees of loft on their driver. So it's basically like hitting a putter loft into the grid.
What loft do you have?
I normally use about a 3.
3. And how long of a shaft do you have?
So I've been doing some testing. Max length we can use is 48 USGA. Okay. I've been doing some testing with Patterson shafts. They make these crazy shafts that I don't want to butch anything, so I'm not going to say anything about how they're made, but they're made a lot different than any other shafts on the market. So it's crazy, too, because I'm using a shaft that would be equivalent to about a stiff flex driver shaft that you get off the OEM shelf at PGA Superstore, and I can swing it 145-plus, and it doesn't spin, like it doesn't make the golf ball spin. So that's kind of something I've been testing over the last couple months, and I love it. So for me, I use about a 47, 47.5. I don't think 48 really benefits me too much. I think because I'm a shorter guy, I actually lose more than I gain.
Are more guys switching to this shaft? I kind of had thought in the past it was just like
4X. Yeah, so ever since Kyle won with that Patterson shaft.
He won with that, okay.
Yeah, I mean, granted, Kyle's the fastest guy in the world, and people have been switching that because they think they're going to give him some type of crazy, you know, Hercules power and stuff like that, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm just in the testing phase. So, like, all my long drive career, I've always hit a little bit stiffer shaft. Never too crazy stiff, but always definitely stiffer. Mm-hmm. So we'll definitely do some testing, especially over here, too, in the cube, and just kind of figure out, like, what shafts create better ball speed, compression, stuff like that.
Yeah, you mentioned Kyle Berkshire, is that how you say it?
Yeah, Berkshire.
Berkshire.
Yeah.
His swing, he like rocks one, he lifts his feet off the rocks back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, in Happy Gilmore, where Shooter McGavin in the woods is practicing Happy's swing, do you think guys are doing that to his?
There's been so many guys on social media that have been doing that.
I mean, long drive guys.
Yes, so many guys. Like, I honestly, like, every time I scroll through my feed on all my social media accounts, there's at least 10 or 15 guys that are doing the same thing in him. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like Kyle's doing that for pure sequence, right? He's not doing that because it gains, like, he could literally stand still, just like a normal golf swing, and still hit the golf ball over 220 miles an hour. But because that gives him something to start his sequence with, he does that.
Kind of just a rhythm, like
a
trigger or a rhythm.
Correct. Yeah, trigger. So just because Kyle does it doesn't mean that you can do it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So people deliver the club differently. I may never be able to deliver the club like Kyle Berkshire, but I'm not going to rock because I think it's going to help me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's funny.
It is.
That's how we are, though, in golf, is you just copy the trend, you know?
That's with any sport,
one guy does it, now everyone's on.
I'm surprised more people aren't swinging like Matt Wolf.
Yeah. I'm on that path myself.
There you go.
Well, not quite the same, but, you know.
I mean, I would say that's with any sport, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, something's hot.
Yeah.
How we were talking downstairs about, you know, just the toll that this takes on the body.
Yeah.
What's sort of the shelf life? I mean, how many years are guys out there for?
I mean, honestly, that's just all based on the person, man. That's all genetics. I mean, you got, you know, some guys that are like Eddie Fernandez is a good example. He's almost 50, and he's still competing in the open division, and he's still putting up 216, 217 ball speed. And the dude does charity golf events. He does over 120 golf events a year and hits probably 5,000-6,000 golf balls a year and is perfectly fine. And then you got other guys that might come into the sport, do it for 6 or 7 months and be like, I can't do this. My back is killing me.
Yeah.
You know, I would say the biggest thing is just doing the correct workouts, you know, and like for me, like from my opinion and my perspective, there's a lot of guys in the sport who work their butts off and work out every single day and lift all this heavy weight and do all this and do all that. But at the end of the day, I haven't seen it transition into them winning more events or them hitting the golf ball farther. I think the biggest thing is working on recovery and working with someone who golf specifically knows what type of workouts to do. Because at the end of the day, you have to strengthen the muscles that you're going to be using the most to prevent injury, right? So like when I broke my hand, I think it was from all the years of baseball, all the years of hitting the baseball off the handle of the bat and having the vibration sent through my hand. And then I get to golf, and because I'm using the same baseball grip and I'm hitting all these golf balls and it's a different swing plane, I think it just was like, I can't take it anymore. You know what I mean? So, like I said, I really think it's more mobility and recovery than it is lifting all these heavy weights and everything like that.
Nick, do you have, for you, do you have, like, specific goals in mind? Or for you, is it just kind of about the journey of just, like, giving it the best shot you got?
You know, I mean, I have big goals with it, and I have short-term goals. With where I'm at now, and I'm very, like, I'm confident, but I'm not a cocky person. Like, I try and be as humble as I can. And just kind of enjoy the ride. But at the same time, I want to beat everyone in the sport. But it takes time, you know, and you have to, in long drive, there's kind of no mess ups, right? Because we do it by a point based program to where we hit each round. If you go OB one round, you get 0 points. That basically knocks you out of the tournament, right? So the biggest thing is to not go OB. Another thing is because, I don't know if I can make this announcement, but I'm doing it anyways, that the World Championships are being held in Chicago, September 3rd through the 9th. It's going to be at Cog Hill, but it would be absolutely mind blowing if I were to win the World Championships in our home city. I mean, I'd probably pass out on stage to be honest, but yeah, I mean,
you gotta go. Yeah. TGP trip
we'll
out be, there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, we'll be there. No, you guys are going to go. My goal this year is to make every single TV event because once you get to the TV events or excuse me, once you get to the top eight for match play is comes down to a lot of luck, right? Because the ball can hit the grid and the ball can take a different bounce, stuff like that. So if you make it to top eight, you give yourself a shot at winning an event. That's basically it.
Got it.
So the goal, first short-term goal is win the event, next win Worlds?
Yeah. I mean, I had a good shot at it in 2017, and I don't know if people have seen it, but the ball that I hit against Justin James in the semifinals hit about 20 yards in on the left side and then took a 90-degree kick left and rolled out at 440 yards.
So that would have been enough.
And if that ball would have stayed in, I would have beat Justin.
Your rival.
And if it would have went the way it did, Mitch Grassing OB'd in the finals. So if I would have hit a ball in, I would have been a world championship. So, but
Nick, what do you think your advantage? Do you feel like you have an advantage out there? Just, I mean, you're like so young in the sport, but you're competing. Like, do you feel like there's something that you have that other guys might not have?
I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, I've been thinking the last couple of years about, like, what do you think of my advantages? I honestly don't think I have an advantage. I think my advantage, honestly, is kind of the people that I know, right? So, like, my group of people that I become friends with or people that I have known can now I can always think of, like, they'll guide me down the right path or kind of what I have to do, you know. Being 5'9" in the sport of long drive is not an advantage. You know, swinging a club at 150 miles an hour, being as short as I am. Granted, I'm a strong individual. I'm a bigger dude. I eat chicken nuggets. But at the end of the day, it's not an advantage, right? So that going for me, no. I think my support system, my wife, my kids, the people that surround me are an advantage for myself.
When I was watching the 2017... you know, replay on Golf Channel, the announcer, I think it might have been Terry Gannon, he said, we were talking to him last night, and I think he's quietly confident.
Yeah.
That's what they describe you. Would you agree with that?
Well, dude, I was pooping my pants, man, the whole time going after, or like, dude, okay, so.
Yeah, because that's so, only started playing, what, at that point, like 2 years or less?
Yeah,
right?
So we'll get more on kind of the real aspect of it and kind of like the real part of life.
That's what we're here for.
So my dad died in 2016, end of 2016, and he wanted to go to a world championship, right? My dad has always been part of me with baseball, whatever type of sport I've done, right? So in 2017, I wore his necklace around my neck, right? So I had no expectations in 2017 of doing well at all, right? So my goal was to go there, like, maybe try and make TV events, and that's it. Because in long drive, like, it's not, like, you win an okay amount of money, but it's not anything life-changing to where you can do anything crazy with, right? So I ended up doing pretty well. But when I got into TV rounds, like, it was like, holy crap. Like, this is, like, unbelievable. Like, I never thought I was going to do this. And then when I went, like, my mindset already going against Joe Miller was, this is it. Like, I'm done. Like, I'm not even, you know, I'm just going to go there and swing my butt off and try and hit one in the grid. And it ended up working, right? So, and then after I passed Joe Miller, I was like, all right, well, then I'm definitely done now. And from top 16 to top 8, the money's pretty different. But from top 8 to semifinals, the money is way different. So then when I went against Will's again one of the top fastest guys in the world, and just the previous round Will hit a 437 ball and I hit a 426, so I'm like, great, like, I'm already out. That's just kind of what my mind was playing of, like, because I haven't been here and I haven't experienced this yet, I'm automatically going to think that I don't belong here, right? So that's kind of another big thing for me too, is like, it's very hard. And this is kind of something that I kick myself in the ass for, because it's very hard for me to see myself winning a tour event for some reason. And it's weird because I have the talent and I have the speed, but it's just like a confidence thing to where, like, I always make it so close and then I always kind of fall off, right? Because I've been there and I've been close to winning stuff, and then it's always been like, I lose, or like something happens, or I just don't hit the ball good. And in the last couple TV events that I've been in, I have not hit a good golf ball on TV. Like, I haven't said that I can confidently say that I got outbeat or that I hit a good golf ball that I'm proud of, you know?
Is there sort of a mental aspect to this? Like,
there is.
I think about, you know, when we're working with our competitive players, like, we call them, like, you know, they're performers, and they have to perform under pressure. And so, you know, a big part of that program is the developing and training of their mind to get themselves in the present moment and to be able to let things go.
Yeah,
do you feel like you need some of that, or that would help?
Yeah. So, like, going back to kind of the whole reality things after this, it's like, growing up as a kid, I've always been a huge hypochondriac and I've always had anxiety, right? So obviously after my dad died, my anxiety went like through the roof, and I've always thought about the worst things that were going to happen to me. But after my son was born, my anxiety got a little bit heightened because I have to take care of another human, right? Luckily, I have a great wife to where I can focus on the golf stuff and she takes care of the kids, yada, yada, yada. But mental aspect is a huge thing. That's why Kyle impresses me so much, because he went from in 2017. So me and Kyle basically started at the same time, like legitimate in the sport. 2017 was Kyle's first year, and 2017 was my first professional career to like doing it and actually doing well. So Kyle very much impresses me because he went from no one taking him serious to he's a wild kid. He swings, like he breaks all these shafts over his back. Like, yeah, he's fast, but he, like, there's no way he's going to win because he just doesn't hit the ball on the grid. To now he's one of the fastest, most dominant hitters in the sport of long drive. I would say he's probably one of the most dominant, fastest hitter sport, like in the whole entire sport of long drive by far. Yeah.
Was your dad a golfer?
My dad was a hockey, baseball, golf, kind of a mixed mash. My dad was a giant man.
You played a little bit growing up. It was like, did he introduce you?
Yeah. So I actually, I'm actually going to be doing some video stuff with a buddy of mine, Roger Steele. He's a good buddy of mine. He does a lot of like media and production stuff. And I have a video that I'll show you guys in like a week or two of me hitting a golf ball when I was probably like 6 or 7 with him recording. It's the funniest thing ever. But my swing looks very eerily the same back then than it does now.
Interesting.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So I'm just really interested in this topic. When your dad died, had you started playing long drive by that point?
Yeah. So 2016, I was kind of in it, but not really. Like, it was kind of a, I went and I did okay. But
because you mentioned quickly that he wanted for you to be in, like, the championship of something.
Yeah, so he's always pushed me and was in same thing in baseball. So, like, he was always very excited that I was doing baseball, or that he was very excited that I was doing long drive. And he would kind of always brag about it to his buddies and stuff like that. So I think it was more like a motivational thing for my dad to do well in 2017 than to even think about myself, right? Mm-hmm. So like when I beat Joe, I got super emotional like in the interview because I was just like, what just happened? Like, yeah. I just beat the reigning champion. This dude is 6'6". I'm 5'9", a kid from Chicago that this is my first time ever being in this situation, and I just beat him by 20-something yards. You know what I mean? So that'll definitely light some fire under your ass, but at the same time, it's like, okay, now I need to go against another guy who hits at 430 yards, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, because you mentioned, like, what was getting you into all this was you're just a competitive person, but yeah. It sounds like your dad has, like, a big part of that as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, my dad always played sports. He was always the guy in hockey that everyone was afraid to stop his slap shot, stuff like that, because he was just a big, powerful dude. And I think, obviously, I got majority of my dad's attributes, but I got a little baby of my mom in me, too. So
I don't know. There's just something about golf and dads, you know, dude, everyone.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. My kid is like, dude, my 2-year-old is either going to be a wrestler or a fighter or something, because he just wants to hit his little brother with the golf club or hit mom and dad. So,
yeah. All right. Well, I think we're about out of time. Nick,
cool.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, a blast. Blast.
This was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nick.
Yeah, of course.
Clean contact.
I'd hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Here it comes.